From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
It's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us. It seems as if we've already started summer. Summer really is over a month away, so don't get too excited, but it's going to be a warm one. I appreciate you being with us. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we are rejoicing and glad that Father George Snyder, the pastor at St. Clair Parish in Roseville, is joining us by phone. Father, good day to you.
Hello, Bob, and to all our listeners, good evening.
Good evening. So good to have you with us, and on this, it's truly a beautiful day. I love this time of year in the valley. I just really...
Yes, it's dry, but we wanted more rain, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. I think the, I remember a few years ago, the bishops of California actually, formally requested prayer for rain. And it rained so much, they had to call it off, quit praying.
Like
you say, it is what it is. Father, you are known, really throughout the world, throughout the diocese. You're the relic guy.
Yes, and of course we for the right purpose of that, it's for promotion and sanctification of the faithful, and promoting the lives of the saints.
Mm-hmm.
And every month we have a theme, and this is always exciting, and it always energizes me to promote. So we're just in the process of putting together this big celebration on May 13th.
Tell us about... Give us a little primer on relics, what they mean, the different degree of relic, et cetera, for people that haven't heard this before.
Well, yes, relics of the saints are called the treasures that we can be in the presence of this communion of saints and their presence and their intercession for us serves as our purpose to emulate their holiness and to ask their intercession for specific needs. Saints are ordinary people like you and me that just receive a calling and they're able to accomplish great things out of ordinary lives. And the relics are ways for us to promote and to catechize our people on the lives of a specific saint, and also not just to promote, but also to emulate their sanctity, and also learn from their mistakes and how they rise above that, and mm-hmm. how they follow and journey what the Lord. So that's primarily the purpose of the promotion of the, I call them the friends of Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These are the friends of Jesus. So you are my friends. If you follow my command, I no longer call you, say, but you are my friends.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the friends of Jesus, and I always promote that friendship, that our communion with them. And we're not alone in our lives. Many people are sad of being alone, but we are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. If we know them, we can. They will accompany us, and that's why the relics that I have and that I use is to promote and to bring them closer to the people. So even saints way back, thousands of years ago, could still. Be made presence to us in this tangible means of their presence to us.
And by a relic, we mean a part of their body, a bone?
Yes, most of the first-class relics are parts of their bones and parts of the body, hair, all of the body parts. And that's first-class relic, hair, and then the bones are are mostly the ones that are put in the reliquary. And then, of course, we also use clothing. Things that they've used are also considered a second-class relic. And then, and it's just as valuable as first-class relics, and also the third-class relic is when we touch something to either the first or second class, becomes a third-class relic. So my forehead was touched by Pope John Paul II twice, so I'm a third-class relic.
Okay, okay. You're not third-class, Father.
Third-class. Yeah, he touched my forehead and blessed it. And I kiss his ring. So, and I have a picture with him. Just looking at the picture of a canonized saint. So, what are the chances of having you next to a canonized saint?
That's darn rare.
Yeah, normally I pray to Saint Anthony of Padua, but what are the chances of having a picture next to Saint Anthony of Padua? We become what we are close to. I hope someday I'll become a saint.
Yes, we all do. That's
and that's why we all strive. And I'm excited. I was just talking to Bishop Soto because this May 13th, we have the relics of the Children of Fatima, and we're preparing for a procession here in the parking lot of the International Rosary with the relics of the Children of Fatima.
Wow.
And then Bishop Soto said, I just spoke to him just a few minutes ago, and he will check his calendar and get back with me. But it will be an exciting event, May 13th, in our parking lot.
What time will that start?
So I want to promote that. May 13th, that's Thursday. That's the anniversary of the first apparition of Mary in Fatima, Portugal, 104 years ago. And it's going to start at 6:30 p.m. in the parking lot. So people will just park their car. We have a huge area. You park your car, you bring your chairs, and you stay behind your car, and the entire parking lot will be filled with people in distancing with your designated parking spot behind that. You can bring your folding chairs. And then the big float of Our Lady will come and beep and process as we are reciting the rosary in different languages.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And we will also process the relic of the two children, St. Francisco and St. Jacinta Marto, that we have obtained from Fatima. And we have a beautiful statue here that was a rare one that was carved there many years ago by Jaime Santos Pereira, one of the old remnants of a carver that did that is part of the family that did the original one in the chapel of the apparition, and we have a replica of that. It's I believe, and many people confirm that this is a beautiful statue, and it was consecrated there, and it was a gift to me by my parents when I celebrated my first mass, an ordination gift. So I consecrated myself to Our Lady, and I promised her, my priesthood will be dedicated to you. You know, I am all yours, Mary, my queen, like Pope John Paul II, I am all yours.
Wow.
So now I've been doing this for many years now, and then every year we celebrate this procession. But it's important this month because our Holy Father called for a rosary marathon.
Yes.
For the month of May.
All right.
And he designated 31 churches every day to connect to this chain of prayers for the end of pandemic. And we will be joining the Shrine of Our Lady of the Basilica of Our Lady of the Rosary in Fatima on the 13th.
Oh, that is wonderful.
So, you don't have to go to Fatima. Of course, you can't go to Fatima. Save your money and discount at St. Clair.
That's great. Isn't May 13th also
May
the anniversary
13th, yeah.
of the assassination attempt on Pope John Paul II?
Well, that's I think it's October 13th.
Is it? For some reason I thought it was May 13th, but we can look it up.
And well, we have to check on that. I think
October 13th is the final apparition.
It's the final
correct?
Apparition. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. John Paul II was shot at the square, I think it's May 13th, by Memon Ali Aja.
Right.
And he attributed his survival from that, from our latest intercession.
Exactly.
And then he actually put that bullet that was taken from his body inside the crown of Our Lady of Apollina.
Yes. Right. Yes. And also, didn't he visit in prison?
Yes, he visited him in prison. He was released. Mehmet Ali Aja was released and then returned back to, I think, Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he wanted to visit and then be part of the canonization of John Paul.
That's
but
right.
I did not think that, I don't know if that was, that I did not know, I think that did not materialize. But
it's a remarkable story.
Remarkable story. I mean, no coincidence. It's God incidents. So I'm excited about this this event here that will take place, and we're expecting a full participation. Hoping that and everyone will come and experience, especially this time of pandemic. We have to pray together and storm heaven to end this this terrible pandemic that separated us from one another.
Yeah, indeed. So we will, our ace producer, Gabe, will determine whether it was May 13th or October 13th, the assassination
attack. I think it's May 13th.
I'm going with May 13th as well.
Yes.
I think that's... That's,
I prepared well for your interview, but that's the one I forgot
that's,
to...
Yeah, that's what yeah, I... Yeah. You know, and it, the what were there were six apparitions, or it was the 13th of every month from May
13th? Our Lady appeared beginning May 13th.
Right.
And then every consecutive 13th of the month, except on August 13th, because the children were kidnapped.
Oh, that's right.
And
that's
they were
right.
released in prison on August 19th. And they went to Valinhos, not in Cova, the area,
right.
where apparition and Our Lady appeared to them on the 19th there in Valinhos.
Yes.
You know, close to the site, but not exactly at the Cova, the area. And they built a shrine there.
Except for August. Okay. Now I have the story right. Yeah, and Gabe has determined that it's May 13th. And
yes.
And he is he's a Jeopardy champion. So
May 13th, yes, that's historic. And then, if you are at the Vatican Square, look for that tile on the ground. That there is a mark of that where that took place. And many people don't know when they go there. And I was there happily, and I said, "What is this M with the coat of arms of John Paul II?" And that spot there, it's a simple, vivid mark right on that spot where he was shot.
Wow.
Right
I think a lot of people, they've so associated it with Fatima that they think it happened at Fatima.
No, it happened
and it didn't.
At
yeah, obviously.
Square. When he was greeting the people,
mm-hmm.
yeah, he actually noted to a child, and then the, you know, it's what they said, Mehmet Ali Aja clicked the trigger and Our Lady guided the bullet.
Yeah. Wow!
So, guide the bullet to in a, I'm trying to save the life of John Paul II.
Right, amen. Wow.
So you
have relics of two. There were the three children,
yes,
of course.
Yes, we have the relic of the three children. Two children, mm-hmm. Francisco and Jacinta.
Uh huh.
I mean, they died at the young age of the WHO epidemic. Francisco,
as was foretold, right.
Yeah, he Francisco died at age of 11.
Wow.
And Jacinta died age of 10. I mean, the time of apparition,
mm-hmm.
Francisco was age 9 and Jacinta was age 7. And Lucia was 10 years old.
Right, and Lucia lived for a very long time.
Yes, she died in 2005, February the 13th, 2005, 98 years old.
Wow.
In the Carmelite convent of Coimbra.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And you also have some relics from Lourdes?
Yes. Bernadette is another one. Yeah, we're supposed to talk about that in the month of Our Lady. Bishop Soto came here and welcomed the Relic of St. Bernadette the month of February, the World Day of the Sick on the 11th. Mm-hmm. And then we welcomed the first glass relic of St. Bernadette that was given to us, the piece of her hair and a habit.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that was a significant gift to us. So it's here, and among other relics that was also provided with that, there are about three big reliquaries of that in our collection.
So are these things permanently at St. Clair, or do they move around?
Yes, we are. You know, Bob, I'm hoping that some generous person are listening to us. I want to build a chapel for all these relics.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now we don't have a space for them, and they're all hiding in a secret location that is protected from all of that. We have thousands of them. They're all have certification of them, and I really want to have a distant someday. I hope a very distant place. I mean, St. Clair's will be a perfect place for it because of our strategic location, and I'll be able to display. There's quite a bit of these relics.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, we put them out. It will take us weeks to put them out together for exhibit every All Souls Day. And it did not materialize because of the pandemic, but the year before that, we put only like 20% of them. It took us almost 2 weeks.
Wow.
We cannot put them all out. It's just too much. And we don't have enough way to put glass around it to protect them. We have major relics of John Paul II. That's tremendously a large amount.
Sure.
And all the, of course, the other major saints. I hope someday I will be able to have a chapel where we can call it the Friends of Jesus.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
And everyone could come and see. And there are many artifacts that I have that I'd like to also put in that display. Okay. Just recently, just yesterday, the rector of Gargano. Monte Gargano in Italy, the site of where the apparition of St. Michael in the 400s there, several times he appeared, and this is under the Holy See, visited by many popes, sent us an exact replica of the statue of St. Michael there and a piece of rock that is used by most of the exorcists, for aiding those who are believed to be possessed. And they testify how powerful this piece of rocks that is from that site that they use for that purpose. And he sent us a huge amount of that. And I promised him I will promote this along with many prayer cards and booklets as well. And if you go in the church today, you'll see that beautiful statuary there. And I placed that big rock in there, huge at all masses for people to see.
Wonderful, wonderful.
And Uli Smith is very happy because he gave quite a bit for all those who are involved in the Unbound Ministries. And these are used for that purpose. And it's not a kind of a superstition or things like that. It's just more of the sacramental. It's an ancient way that St. Michael consecrated the cave. And this is the only basilica in the world that was never been consecrated by man.
Hmm.
St. Michael did, and the Pope accepted that. And there are many healings and miracles that took place in that place.
Very wonderful.
So many people have been to Gargano, Monte Gargano. If you go and visit Padre Pio in San Giovanni Rotondo, you have to go to Gargano because that's only about 30 minutes drive.
Oh, good. That's good to know. That's very good.
That's the new one that we have. It's on display right now in the church. The church is open, and you can see a beautiful marble statue there of St. Michael that was blessed from that site by Father, the rector, Father Suki.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Very good. Well, again, May the 13th in the parking
lot. May 13th, Thursday, come at 6 p.m. and it starts at 6:30.
Okay.
You'll have a great time. And then the church will also be open for them to see the inside of the church. We have a shrine. We put a beautiful shrine there to honor St. Michael and St. Joseph. And Our Lady will be on the float. If they come, bring some folding chairs and some hats. I think it will be a good shade at that around this time.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And if they have any rose petals from their yard, just bring them with them.
Oh good, yeah.
Family rose petals, because the people bring. You should see this procession when people bring buckets of rose petals, and they make a carpet as the lady passed by.
Oh, that's
just one of a kind. If you would have drone above our parking lot, you'll see it all, and covered with petals of roses.
Wow.
We do this every year, and we will be distributing the handkerchiefs, the white handkerchiefs that we have ordered. Last 5 years, we have thousands of the white handkerchiefs that will be distributed for people to wave, that's similar to the tradition in Fatima. And they are blessed and touched to the relic of the children.
Very good. Well, we will look forward to it. I'm going to pack up the family and the folding chairs, and we'll get over there on the 13th.
Yes, and I see you all, and we'll pray together. We will storm heaven, and Our Lady is with us and all the saints.
Very good. Father Snyder, thanks so much. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, Bob. God bless everyone.
God bless you, too.
Keep everyone safe.
Thanks so much. That's Father George Snyder, the pastor at St. Clair Parish in Roseville. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by John Watkins, the director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns for the Diocese of Sacramento. Stay tuned. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Bishop William K. Wiegand, the Bishop Emeritus of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Denning.
Thank you, Bishop Wiegand. Thanks for all you have done and continue to do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. And he was the founder of the Bishop's Hour 22 years ago, so we thank him for that as well, for his foresight. John Watkins, the Director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns, joins us, and he brought a Bible with him. What's going on here?
I always bring a Bible, don't you?
I got the pocket edition.
He really got freaked out. No, I am Catholic, everybody. I really am Catholic.
He's a Catholic.
I carry a Bible around as well. Yeah, yes. Why not?
And you've got Mass times on your cell phone, and you're just good to go.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Doesn't everyone? Yeah.
Yeah. So I note you even have a little section in the Bible kind of sectioned off there because we're going to talk about racism.
Yeah.
Is it right and just journeying from racism to communion in Christ? A pastoral letter from our bishop, Bishop Soto. Mm-hmm. I urge everyone to read it. It's not long. It's 4 or 5 pages, but it's not long. Mm-hmm. But it's right there. I mean, it hits right in the heart. Like there is no place in our faith for racism. Period. Mm-hmm. He said that somewhere in there, and I just circled it and underlined it and said that's the whole essence right there. There's no place in our faith for racism.
Amen. Yeah, and I think the title is apropos because I think when I talk with people and they ask me what I'm doing right now, and you know, one of the activity I'm doing a lot, as a lot of people are these days, especially people involved in ministry, but the fact that I'm involved in the anti-racism initiative, so. You know, I rarely talk to anyone that's sort of pro-racism,
right?
Not too often. I'm sure that's out there. But the question is usually more like, but why are we doing this? Uh-huh. And so the title is apropos, it is right and just. And that's coming straight from the Eucharistic prayer as we were kind of going through the prayer, and it is right and just that we do this. So why is this important? And you see in the second line, journeying from racism to communion. And it's really important for all of us to see how this issue of racism affects all of us.
Right.
And so actually I brought the Bible in part because I wanted to, you know, talk about just one of the parts of the Eucharistic prayer that we always read in Mass. You know, this is my body, which is given up for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And it continues to go on. But people, we're so familiar with that we're not really familiar with the context. Uh-huh. Of mm-hmm. of when he was giving this the Eucharistic prayer and who he was talking to and what he was trying to say to them. And so what he was really trying to say was he was speaking to the church in Corinth.
Mm-hmm.
And the church in Corinth, this is, you know, in the early part of the church, they had, you know, rich people and poor people.
Right.
The Hellenists and the Jews, they were together, but they were separate.
Right.
And if you didn't have any food, you were hungry.
Right.
And St. Paul was scandalized by that. And he said, I hear that there are divisions among you, and I believe in part, for there must be factions among you in order that those who are genuine among you may be recognized. When you come together, it is not the Lord's Supper that you eat. For eating, each one goes ahead with his own meal. One goes hungry, another gets drunk. What? Do you not have houses to eat and drink? Or do you despise the church of God and humiliate those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I commend you for doing this? No, I will not. And then he continues to go on, and then this is where he says, if you have concern with your brother, go first and reconcile.
Right, right.
Then come. Well, right. What he is saying here in the whole passage, what he is saying is, do we want to commune with God?
Right.
Do we want to? Yeah. That's why all of us go to Mass, right?
Exactly.
All of us are seeking this intimate, deep encounter with God. But what is going to keep us from that? Well, if we cannot commune with our neighbor, the people right in front of us, then our worship with God is meaningless.
Right.
So racism, and not just racism, but all the parts of racism that we may not even be aware of ourselves, the way that we see our brothers and sisters that keep us a barrier from one another, that is also keeping us disconnected from Christ. That is disconnecting all of us. So in an existential way for the church, this is a fundamental issue. Mm-hmm. We have to address it, you know, internally. But of course, you know, throughout society, our job is to bring right relationship to the whole world. But of course, you know, first we have to start with our own church. And so with this document, Bishop is primarily addressing the Catholic community, and it's looking internally towards ourselves that we need to take ownership and take a look at the issues of racism within our own institutions. Mm-hmm. Even while we strive for justice, even while we try to address this in the broader community, that we first have to address it in our own home. So I think it is right and just that we address this. And, you know, I think Bishop was trying to find a time to release this document when it wouldn't be sort of in the context of a racial moment.
Exactly.
Because he really didn't want it to be a political document. He wanted it to be a pastoral document. Unfortunately, these days, we cannot find that.
And
there isn't any more time for that. And you know, there are political forces, unfortunately, that are using the issues of racism that are present in society, the real issue of racism on both sides of the political spectrum. They're using this issue of racism for short-term political benefit. But that's not really what this document is about. This document is really ultimately about how do we listen to one another? How do we begin to have empathy, to begin to try to walk into each other's shoes, to begin to see the issues, this issue of racism, from other people's perspectives? And so we do that by listening. We do that really through dialogue. And so it's a practical document. It gives various activities that the church is doing and is encouraging for people in our own community to be doing this as well.
You know, the one thing that I find, and I'm sure you find in your family too, John, is listen to your kids. They don't have a racist bone in their body. They weren't raised with it. Mm-hmm. They didn't go through a lot of the things that we went through, and that they're stunned by some of the stuff going on now. It's just like, I mean, I lived through the civil rights movement, and you know, and it's just so different. Their experience. They can't believe anybody is doing that. I mean, they have their own problems, but they really don't. They don't see the race. I mean, they see it, but they don't.
Sure.
They really, the whole generation. They do not demonstrate it.
Right. Well, you know, it's different. I would say that, you know, racism is a human condition, so it is in every group to a degree. We have to become aware of the reality of it. And it's just where we begin to overcome that when we put God at the center and Christ at the center. And then we begin to try to see our brothers as brothers and sisters.
Right. All.
And then we try to begin to understand and listen to others.
Right.
And to understand where are they coming from. So people from different backgrounds, they happen to be at the same church together. And a lot of times we assume that they have the sort of gone through the same experience that we have gone through.
Right.
That we assume that when we talk about racism, that they understand it from the same frame that we
right,
do.
Right.
But racism is not just a sort of an ideological concept or a word, but it is based on lots of experience.
Mm-hmm.
It is loaded. So if somebody says we're going to talk about racism, to me, and I'm a white male, I might have an emotional response that's a little bit, uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might worry that somebody's going to – I'm going to say the wrong thing.
Say the wrong word.
You know, because I've had those experiences, right?
Sure.
Another person might have another one that is based on them being called names and
right.
Not included, or where even their livelihoods have been – affected by
right.
their race. So it's not about judging my experience is worse than yours, or it's just to try to first understand and then have some empathy, and then come with a common sense that what we're really trying to do together is to come to communion.
Right.
Right. We don't always have to agree. We don't have to have the same thinking. We don't have to worship in exactly the same way.
Right.
You know, there's Black Catholic might be more inclined to a gospel
right.
type of,
right.
you know, worship, and another, you know, so that's not the essential thing. We should be focusing on what's really important is, are we all journeying together to God? And if so, how do we do that better? And that's what the document is really trying to do, is how do we walk together, journey together in communion with Christ?
You know, I talk about the younger generation. I think you described to me some time ago about a workshop or a get-together, a session at one of our local Catholic high schools, mm-hmm. where you could see dramatically the differences of in that generation of the Black experience, mm-hmm. And the white experience, to really stereotype, but yeah. It wasn't that anybody was overtly racist or overt, but it was really
they just had a different experience immediately,
yeah,
and both the groups, or at least one of the groups, I could say for sure, wasn't aware that there was a reality.
That there was a reality, it didn't, yeah.
So there was, we had two groups. We had the student council, and they were primarily, you know, white kids. And then you had the Black student union, and they were obviously mostly kids of color. And it was a lot of tension in mm-hmm. that room, very quiet. And no one was answering any questions. And then the facilitator just asked a simple question. She asked everyone, she said, well, raise your hands if your mom or dad has had a discussion with you about what you need to do if you get pulled over by a mm-hmm. police officer. Mm-hmm. And all the Black kids raised their hands.
Right.
And nobody else did.
Nobody
and
else
then
did.
She just said, well, keep your hands. Now look around and you know, all the Black kids. Now, did any of you guys have a meeting, or was there a group email
right.
or... No, this just sort of happened. Okay. You know, see, we have a different experience
exactly.
organically that's happening.
Right.
And we just are trying to be aware of it, just putting it forward. And then we started having a real conversation about things on both sides. It's important to recognize that race is an element that kind of affects everyone. And some kids were like really, I get intimidated. I don't know what to say. You know, the kids from the leadership, but the white kids were. I get worried when we talk about race because I'm not trying to say something bad, but I'm not
right.
sure what the right thing to say
yeah.
is, so I don't say anything.
Yeah, I'm not empowered to say it because I'm afraid it's going to be the wrong thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, and why do you think that? Well, because I've. You know, I've had a bad thing said to. Oh, okay, so but see, those are real experiences. That's
yep.
human,
yep.
And so taking this conversation that we're having, which has been, when we look in the media, it's primarily an ideological conversation and a political conversation,
right.
and just trying to move it down to a human conversation, mm-hmm. so that we can kind of at least for our community grow in communion. That's really important. It's not to say that addressing, you know, structural related issues of racism in our schools or in the criminal justice system and other places aren't a very important thing. It's just that as a church, it is just and right for
yeah,
us
exactly.
to address this issue, because we're the Catholic Church. We don't have – there's not a lot of Black Catholic mm-hmm. People in this diocese. But oh my goodness, we have a lot that we are a multicultural church.
Oh boy.
And we need to be very good in terms of being able to hear and listen and have empathy and work together and how we are church together. Because otherwise, I think our effectiveness as messengers of the gospel, the good news, is muted. Because if your teacher, God bless them, is speaking in a way that is not effective to half of the group. Mm-hmm. And they feel excluded from it,
right?
Because of the whatever the way the language that they're doing it, you know, it's kind of more geared, let's say, for the white kids, or maybe it's geared for another group. Then just got to be aware that that other group is not coming with you.
Yeah.
So we have to reach people. This is just evangelization 101. You know, all the good evangelists and the saints learned that you really need to immerse yourself and to speak the language of the people that you're trying to bring to Christ. And that's the same thing what this document is saying, is we have to listen to each other. We have to be able to learn how to speak the language, to understand the pains, suffering the people are going to, so that then they're willing to hear the message of the gospel. Because if they feel like you're not listening to the pains in the real world and what they're dealing with, then they're not really going to think that it's really important what you have to say.
Exactly. You know, you can start with, we're all made in the image and likeness of God.
Amen.
You know, right off the bat, okay, and God loves that person as much as he loves me. I know he loves me. Mm-hmm. He really loves that person as much. You know what I mean? You know, like, sometimes you have to, you know, especially somebody that's putting a dagger in your side or something, you know, you go, really? You know? Yep. He's a mean person, or she's a mean person, or whatever, you know, somebody, a school teacher you didn't like or something, and you go, no, God can't really, nope, yeah, he does, yeah, he does. He it probably is more in their life than in your life, you know, and it's just, but, you know, I remember once having a little discussion with, just at dinner time with friends who don't share our faith, and you're a Catholic church. You're just a bunch of old white guys, and it was, you know, it was friendly. It wasn't ugly. And I said, you should come to Mass with me sometime.
Yeah.
And count the number of old white guys there. There'll be like 500 people at Mass, and maybe you'll see 11 old white guys, and you will not see. You will see a melting pot, mm-hmm. and it's not socially engineered. It's not. It's a tremendous.
No, it's unique.
Pot.
It is. It's the only common space, very few common spaces left, where people are truly engaged in relationship. So, what I mean by that is, it's not just multiracial, multicultural, but it's also crosses the ideological spread. I mean, you will literally, absolutely have every group. You have a strong group of folks that are, you know, Donald Trump. Fans, and then you have people that are way on the left, and then you have everyone in between. And that isn't important, really, in the big scheme of things.
Yeah.
What is important, and unfortunately, I really do think part of the social breakdown is that we're putting too much emphasis on the ideological group that we're kind of associated
with.
I think social issues, obviously, Catholic Charities and Social Concerns, that's what I do. So social concerns are important. It's just that people are more important, and we have to start, you know, that's the most important. That's why social concerns matter, is because people matter. And so when our ideology trumps, and in the general word, not, but when that's more important than people and communities, we're in big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, you're driving down the freeway and somebody's on the side of the road with a flat tire, and you start to slow down and you see the Trump bumper sticker, or you see a Biden bumper sticker, and it affects whether or not you stop.
Yeah.
There's something
that's,
wrong.
That's something wrong. I mean, I would like to think that that's not going to affect me, but there it's too many, way too many.
Yeah.
And but the good news, I think, for us is, and there's very few spaces where folks engage in a meaningful way, in a common way, with each other. But the Mass, the celebration of the Eucharist, when we come around the table together, that's a very intimate place. And we are all there, and we're all striving for the same thing, to be together with Christ.
Right.
And so, wow, that's pretty awesome. And we're coming from these very diverse backgrounds. And if we can learn how to be together, but what if we were coming around that table and we really weren't together?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it more a little bit like what St. Paul was talking about? Is your worship really, you know, is it really efficacious? Are you really in communion if you're not in communion with each other? Oh, God, look at Bob. Yeah. You know, he's a Biden fan. You know, oh, geez, he's going to hell. Yeah. You know, so we have to be very attentive. And that does not mean that we can't have strong political beliefs. And I'm very engaged. But we just have to be careful as Catholics to always put God in the front. Yeah. And then our brothers and sisters, you know, right there after that, the things that we work for, my job, which I believe is very important, helping those in need, goes behind my faith and my family.
Right.
And the people that I need to care for that are particularly need my, you know, that depend on me, then my ministry.
Right.
As important as it is. Yeah. Politics for me is for way down there on the list, I guess. Maybe it's not as important as for other people. It should be. I engage. I go to rallies. I do the Walk for Life. I stand out in front of abortion. I do what we should all do, which is be engaged. But I don't let that become that's not who I am. I'm a child of God. What's bigger than that?
Yeah. I marched for civil rights in the 60s.
Yeah.
And I go to the Bishop Gagos maternity home dinner every year.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I don't find those incongruous.
Absolutely. Well, they're not.
They shouldn't be.
Yeah, they're not. But, you know, at the same time, you aren't the bishop guy. We are called to do the good works. We are called to help our brothers and sisters. And some of us are going to be doing this or that. Yeah. And it is good. But we don't have to add to how great we are as a child of God and a disciple of Christ.
Right.
Like, that's good. That doesn't mean we're always good, that we're sinners. But whether I'm the Donald Trump guy or that's not the biggest important thing. And I think we need to get focused on what is important. And when we begin to do that, then we can address this issue of racism with a little bit of humility.
Yeah.
Because if, you know, tendency people, well, you're going to talk about racism, and they immediately go to their ideological corners.
Yep.
That is the opposite of what we're trying to do. In neither case, that's not what we're trying to do here. But even if that's what happens, that's where we begin, that's okay too. Because what we don't want to do, and this is really another concern, is we don't want to allow bad things that are happening inside the church, just like the sex abuse, and don't get addressed, don't get brought up.
Right.
And St. Paul says we need to take the things that we do, and he was speaking to the church, that the church has in the darkness, and we need to bring it up to the light of Christ. For anything that has been brought up to that light of Christ reflects light, that it becomes something that can be good. And so even this bad thing of racism, when we bring it up in the context of faith, where we're sincerely trying to seek for communion, it's good, it's just and right. So we don't have to be afraid of the uncomfortable conversations, because what we're trying to do, we're not trying to win.
Yeah, that's right.
The argument, we're trying to grow in a deeper relationship with our brothers and sisters.
I need to be reminded of that all the time about winning the argument. You know, it's like, no, I want to win this argument, you know. Because you're wrong and I'm right, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I was blessed that my brother-in-law, who lives very close by, is African-American.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember during the O.J. Simpson trial, we didn't watch it together, but it was just front page news every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was live on television. You got to see the whole trial. And it was, we'd get together on a weekend or something and have a barbecue and we'd talk. And it was like dramatically different. The testimony that came out, OJ's demeanor, all these things the defense attorneys, what they said, the prosecution, what they said. We just had a different look at it. Mm-hmm. And it was like, and yet, because we'd known each other for years, we had great respect for each other. We liked each other. There was no contention there. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, he's saying one thing, and he's saying, no, no, no. Let me tell you a story from when I was growing up in Amarillo, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, yeah. You know. And just to see his perspective versus my perspective was very, very helpful to me and hopefully helpful to him.
Yeah,
because it wasn't like we have an argument about guilt or innocence. It was just the way things were presented, mm-hmm. the way the testimony went. He saw it through a much different, exactly as you said, based on his life experiences, and I was seeing it in a radically different way, based on my life experiences.
Yeah, and that's where when we talk about coming to truth, that's what we're trying to do. It's not. You know, there may be one thing objectively more right than the other. But when you're looking to get to truth, it's really in that conversation where ultimately you're beginning to see the world through another person's lens. You're beginning to grow closer to the other person, and you're beginning to see God in the other person. That's really the gift.
Yep.
And so that's the challenge, I think, for us, is to not be afraid to use the racism word, because it is kind of a third rail kind of thing, because it's just part of humanity, and by being face forward and having the conversations, difficult conversations, as long as we do it well. And that's why really what the initiatives related to what Bishop is doing are based on the conversations that we had early on. And what we learned was that most of the injuries, if you will, by folks, the Catholics of color, happen in part by unintentionally, by well-meaning people, well-meaning teachers.
Right.
Let's have a conversation about Stephon Clark.
Right.
Okay, well, it turns into a debate, but one of the people, that's their cousin, and that's the grandma's house, and this is personal, and this isn't a debate. This is something very real. Another kid actually lives this, had a similar experience. So you have different experiences, and so what we need to do, or what we've been doing, is teaching people how to have to recognize when you're in a sort of a racial moment, when the temperature starts rising, you can tell, and then how do you respond? How do you then begin to engage in a conversation that creates a safe space, and that allows the other person to share their experience, so that you can minister to them ultimately, and then continue on with what you want to instruct. So we just have to learn how to do a better job to be able to, so that we're not afraid. Oh, let's not talk about Stephon Clark. No, you should talk about Stephon Clark, but you need to be aware that there's a lot of kids in the room that when you're talking now about this kind of subject, it may affect people differently. So let's create a space. Let's create rules about this conversation, and let's say what this conversation is about and not about. It's not about winning. It's about trying to understand how people are. How do you think, and why do you think this, and where did your, you know, what led you to think this, as opposed to this is the fundamental, is the right and wrong. I mean, so that's kind of what the initiatives that we've been doing have been focused on.
It's a great document. It's available on the diocese website, scd.org, sacramentocatholicdiocese.org, a pastoral letter from Bishop Soto. It is Right and Just, Journeying from Racism to Communion in Christ. We do have a lot of work to do. I know when, 50-some years ago, when you're marching with I didn't march with Dr. King. You know, you can say that now because nobody knows. You know, they didn't have cameras back then. You know, it's like, oh, I was arm in arm with him.
So many people that marched with
him. Yeah, that's right, you know. And you know, we had a number of civil rights initiatives when I was in college, and If you'd said then what's going on now, you go, well, no, this would have been solved. We'd have solved this. And there have been tremendous strides, I think. But you look at in recent months, the anti-Asian violence and discrimination, just where you go, where did this come from? Yep. Where and why and how? It's on the rise. Maybe it's just a blip on the radar, but just to see it out there is stunning. Yeah. And I know I don't want to be accused of ever being a racist. I don't want to be accused of carrying white guilt.
Yeah.
You're just doing this because you're a guilty white person. You know, I can't help the color of my skin any more than anybody can help. That's who God made me. God made them. God made you. God made everybody. That was his choice, not any of our choices.
Yeah.
And yet, I feel deeply that we've got a long ways to go.
I agree. And I think Bishop understands this. I think that initially there was a sort of a hope that we could really tackle this in a big way and make some significant. We recognized kind of early on as we started doing the listening that this might be something that we'll just be working on for a long time,
right.
That this is
right.
just something that we have to continue to work on. And I think that's okay because that's what church is all about.
Yep. No,
we didn't come in perfect. God knows that. I think God just it really is inviting us to engage in the battle, to try to work together, to come to communion with Him. He just desires that we grow closer to Him, but He also desires that we grow closer to each other. And so, I've just in the limited amount of racial dialogues that I've had, it is liberating because I would say for myself, I would have been much more hesitant just to have a conversation, just to be honest, just to say, this is me.
Yeah.
But I've come to recognize, that's okay. I could just share, this is my experience. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's not a better than your, nope. It's just, it is this experience. This is how I've experienced race in my life. And the more honest I can be about it, the better. I think not for the sake of white guilt, I'm not trying to make a confession. I'm just saying this is how the kind of how I came to
right.
probably this background experience of race that I've had to deal with, that I have in my history, my mind. So I think that, it, by just being able to listen, and it's eye-opening. It is.
Yeah.
And it's nice. It's really nice. These conversations have been really nice. Just hear different people. Sometimes I get caught up in thinking, and I'm so glad that everyone doesn't think like me. It's really nice that it's amazing how many ways and reasons why people come to church. I kind of forget that. And so it's nice to listen to each other, and especially with intentionality, reaching out to groups that maybe I wouldn't otherwise reach out to.
Exactly.
So I think that's, again, what the initiative is about.
John, always a pleasure. We need to continue this conversation, and we're against the clock now. So Gabe is giving us the wrap it up signal so violently. So I'm glad he's behind the glass there. Thanks so much. Thanks for all you do for Catholic Charities and Social Concerns and for the whole area.
Thanks, Bob. It's great being in the studio today.
Yes, it is. First time in a long, long time.
Oh, so thank God for that.
Yeah.
Amen.
Indeed. Amen.
All right.
That'll do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior crush, showing that God is love and God is just.